So we can start this meeting. I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife to order. Determination of quorum to Mark.
Chairperson Mark.
Present.
Vice Chair Zuber.
Present.
Member Beamer.
Here.
Member Green.
Here.
Member Young.
Here.
The quorum is present.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to take public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda.
Public Frank, comment? You up?
No, I don't have anything right now.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Advisory Board members. Is the mic on there, my dear? Check one. Are you there?
Keep talking. I don't have any issues, but it's okay.
Well, I have issues too, but that's okay. Well, I have that problem too sometimes. Thank you very much. Tomorrow will be the start of Trout in the Classroom for some 10 different classrooms ranging from Carson City into Douglas County, Story County, and, of course, Reno. Of course, Trout in the Classroom is where kids, generally fifth grade is the target group, fourth, fifth grade, but mostly fifth grade, that raises trout from fertilized eggs supplied by the Nevada Department of Wildlife. It is a Nevada-authorized curriculum, and kids learn an awful lot. It's about a six-week course whereby at the end the smolt or fingerlings are planted, stocked, with Endow's permission into waters that are chosen by Endow. The kingpins of it are really the teachers that have decided to take on this class, which when these eggs hatch, the water has to be changed frequently as nitrates develop, and of course the fish have to be fed. So water changing is probably the toughest part. Anyway, they take time out of their lives to do it. And the kids learn biology, mathematics, entomology, and habitat of the trout and what trout prey upon and what prey upon trout. Thank you. Any questions?
Quick question on that. How many schools in Carson City are participating?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, there could be dozens. There could be over a dozen.
In Carson?
In Carson.
Great.
I really don't know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just know that there's at least, oh my gosh, there's at least four classrooms at Edith Fridge. I don't know what happened to Mrs. Zuber, if she got eggs this trip or not. She
didn't have any
this year. But Virginia City, I'm going to do the course with Hugh Gallagher Elementary up at Virginia City, even though they were so snowed in, they couldn't get their tanks or refrigeration units. So we're doing a dry class, if you will. But they're still learning about the species, the salmonid, and our state fish, for goodness sakes. Just basically, that's what's going on. Hope that answered your question, Chairman.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Other public comment? As a member of the public, I do have a comment. I didn't bring one for everyone, but in light of today's weather, the Natural Resource Conservation Service came out with their stream forecast. And I thought it would be a great time to talk about stream forecasts on a day like today. And I'll give mine to anyone in the public who wants it. Just to let you know, Lake Tahoe, the official Lake Tahoe 50% rise from October 1st to July is forecast at 5.2 feet. The normal rise in that same period is 2.2 feet. So 3 feet over normal, just that alone. And you can look at the other numbers here. And this was the official stream flow and reservoir rise as of February 1st. So it's only going up. So anyway, I thought that would just be a good little segue into our nice rainy weather. Yes, sir.
Chairman, do you happen to have the numbers for Lahontan, Lake Lahontan?
I do. And in fact, they are. All of these numbers came from NRCS's website. They're all available there. Go to Snowtel. And right now, the 50%, which means there's a 50% chance it'll happen and won't happen, the 50% between March and July for Lahontan is sitting right at 550,000 acre feet.
More.
That's more. Additional rise. So it's sitting, Lahontan's sitting right now at 165,000 acre feet, and you can add 550,000 acre feet to that. And that's hence probably why they put out a notice that releases may be occurring soon.
Towards Stillwater, I take that.
Well, it's just going the other way.
Oh, the other way?
Yeah, okay. Anyway,
wow.
Any other public comment? Yes, sir.
Just want to remind folks, this being a legislative year, Friends of Nevada Wildlife is going to hold the legislative luncheon again on April the 10th, third floor legislative building. All donations are readily accepted. Seriously, we have a good number of NGOs and different organizations who will be sponsors. And again, we're going to have wild game for lunch. So anybody who hasn't had elk or pheasant, or I'm trying to think of what has been donated so far, chucker, and venison, that's what's going to be on the menu.
April 4th?
April the 10th.
10th, thank you.
Nice.
11:45.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Yes, sir.
Hi. I apologize. I'm having some technical delays here. So we received, all of us at the CAP just received, I just got it, my secretary gave it to me as I was walking out the door, public comment from Ms. Judy Karen in regards to, and I will give this to Tamar to post within 24 hours, okay? Public comment from Ms. Judy Karen. I went through and read it prior to the meeting, Mr. Chairman, and what it states really is that she is soliciting county advisory boards to consider supporting the Nevada Dream Tag 2017 year quotas and hunts. And so I'll leave that with you. Each one of you received that. You'll probably get it in your inbox.
Well, since that's an agenda item, we can bring that up at that particular point. So
she asked to have it read in public comment, so.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'd like to move to item number 3, adoption of the agenda. The agenda, I've taken a look at it. I don't see if have any questions or concerns. Gentlemen?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Agenda is adopted. Item number 4, disclosures. Any member of the advisory board may inform the chair of his intent to make a disclosure of a conflict of interest on an agendized item or relative advisory board business. Disclosures of conflicts of interest must also be made at the time the specific item is made. So this is, gentlemen, any conflicts of interest coming up? No? Okay. Moving on, approval of the minutes from November 14th. Thank you, Tamar, for attaching them to the packet. For those of you who haven't seen them before, and that would be Jean, this is the format they've come in. I assume you saw what they are.
I saw it.
Okay.
Got it right here.
All right. I have no comments on them. Gentlemen, any comments? I would entertain a motion.
Salute.
To approve.
Second.
Second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you very much. Election of Carson City Advisory Board officers. We have a chair and a vice chair. It is a one-year term. The term ends January 31st, 2018. And we have, so anyway, we need to consider a chair and a vice chair. I would like to do that on separate items. And so we could start with chair. Is there any motions or nominations from the advisory board? Yes, sir.
I'd make a motion to elect Bob Beamer as chair.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
I would second that. I would second that if the committee or if the board is in support of that.
All right, and any other nominations? Okay, seeing no further nominations, call the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. So we have a new chair. Congratulations.
Right. I don't know if that's in order, but.
So, Dan, since we have a new chair, should he call for the nominations for vice chair?
I think this is a good transition point.
Perfect.
There you go.
Perfect. So, all right, so we'll call for nominations for vice chairman for the upcoming 2018 or 17 calendar year.
I can make a motion that Doug Martin for vice chair.
Call for a second.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
Apparently no other nominations we need.
Okay. All right.
That's 5-0. That's 5-0. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Bear with me. You guys threw me for a loop. I'll just tell you that right now. So,
that deal you can't refuse.
All right. Okay, so carrying on to the next agenda item, this is an informational item where we've asked for a discussion regarding an update. From senior park planner Vern Cron. Did I get that right, Vern? I always get the last name wrong. I'm sorry. On improvements at the Carson City Rifle and Pistol Range. So if you can come up to the podium and state your name for the record, please. And whoever else you have with you there.
For the record, Vern Cron, senior park planner, and I have with me this evening Steve Brunner. He is our Deputy Director of the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Department. We're going to tag team this tonight. As you'll recall, I was not able to join you the last time you had your meeting, so I submitted a report in writing. So we got that to you. Although that information that we provided you, we were glad to do that. It just doesn't give the board the opportunity to ask questions back. So I thought I would take this opportunity to do that this evening. Also, part of the reason Mr. Brunner is here is we are looking, we've had some damage out at the Rifle and Pistol Range related to some of the storm events that we've had. So he's been the one kind of spearheading that effort. I didn't know if the committee would want to talk about that. So he's here to answer questions or anything related to that and give me moral support if necessary. So we're ready to go. I wanted to let everyone know, just to kind of kick this off, the city has acquired a grant from the Nevada Department of Wildlife to put in a vault toilet out at the Rifle and Pistol Range. The contract request has been submitted to the Purchasing and Contracts Department here at the city, and then we're waiting on some permitting issues. So we're getting real close. The intent, of course, is to have that done by the end of the year, have the vault toilet installed, as well as all the ADA improvements associated with that. So. That's kind of the most current news that we have. We are also, some of you can remember that we did also, in the previous year, get a grant for our security gate out there at the rifle and pistol range. We've been kind of waiting on some things to actuate that. We will be actuating that very soon, date to be determined, but it's in the near future that we'll get that up and going.
So it is not active right now?
Not at this point. So it will be shortly. I did want to also acknowledge as a part of this presentation is that, and I believe, if I remember right, Kathy King sent you out our media press release related to the vault toilet. Again, some information for you. And this was the picture that was associated with the paper article, if you saw that in the Nevada Appeal, or also on Carson Now, it was also up for that.
Is that the in-kind match that you guys received the donation?
Yes. Yeah, the $6,210 contribution. Those contributions were from the foundation, but the two groups that are under the umbrella of the foundation that put that money together was the Northern Sierra Ladies Gun Club, who provided part of that, and the Nevada Law Enforcement Instructions. So we're very appreciative of their contributions through the foundation to this project, and that's kind of where we are in the grand scheme of things. I don't want to take any more time than I need to, so if you have questions for either myself related to a couple of the projects or Mr. Brunner related to some of the improvements that we're going to have to make out there as a result of the storm events, we're here.
So if I may, Mr. Brunner, can you just give us an overview of what's going on out there with relation to the weather events we've had? What's the extent of the damage? What's your guys' plan of action going forward to correct it? And I'm sure you're going to capitalize on that, right? That if you guys have to fix something, you're going to improve it, right? So.
Right, yeah. First, for the record, Steve Brunner, Deputy Director of Parks and Recreation. Good evening, and thanks for having us. I'm pleased to be here to provide you a little bit of information about what's going on with the rifle and pistol range. What's being passed around is a snapshot of what was taken out of a software program called Fulcrum. Basically, as everyone is aware of the recent flood event that we had on the 8th of January, there were some significant damages to city infrastructure, and none the least was the rifle and pistol range. As it does indicate on there are several pictures as well. I went down there as soon as the event was over. I think it was on the 10th of January that I went down there, and we did secure the rifle and pistol range during the flood event, as a safety precaution to prevent anyone from going down there and potentially getting hurt during a flood event. So there was about $15,000 worth of erosion damage. That's most of the damage that occurred down there. It was erosion damage, as well as a clogged culvert and some erosion from one of several of the berms and the pistol bays as well. So that we left closed for about a week and a half. It was locked. It was secured. Both gates, both the Flint Road gate, as well as access into Carson River Canyon, the gate as well was also secured, because as I'm sure everyone is aware, you can't get into the rifle pistol range through that access as well. So just to be safe, we went ahead and closed both gates, as well as there was some significant rock fall in Carson River Canyon as well. And not just rock, I'm talking big boulders. So that would have caused some significant damages to some vehicles if somebody got caught back there. So we went ahead and closed both gates. And we kept both gates closed, like I said, pretty much for about a week and a half. And that was mainly so that we could conduct, which is still ongoing, all these assessments that you see there, as well as the rest of the assessments for the damages for the city, are all preliminary. The damage assessments, my staff, as well as Public Works, are still in the process of going out there and assessing damages to all the city infrastructure. And that's an ongoing process. We're working closely with the state, with the DEM, Department of Emergency Management, and FEMA should be following here very shortly as well. Once those assessments are made, then we can start opening up facilities. A lot of our facilities, in particular, are trails, Carson River, the Carson River Park, the trails there, as well as Empire. I got hit the hardest, about $612,000 worth of damages alone. Just for our parks and recreation, we're sitting at, and again, this is preliminary, but about $1.6 million of damages to our parks, recreation facilities, our trails, and open spaces. Matter of fact, we just discovered another significant damage to the trail out at Carson River Park leading out to Mexican Dam, a sinkhole. a pretty sizable sinkhole. That was just discovered today, so we had to go ahead and secure that off. So even though it's been, what, 3 weeks, almost a full month since the flood, we're still finding more damages out there. And as far as the time frame of when we can expect to see repairs, well, again, as I mentioned, you know, we're talking, you know, $1.67 million just for the parks and parks and rec, trails, facilities, open space. All total right now, again, all preliminary, but the city is looking at about $3.25 million worth of damages. That's going to take some time. It's going to take, obviously, we don't have that kind of budget, that kind of money just lying around. Of course, there was a declaration of emergency that was declared by the governor. I don't think that the president has yet declared that himself, but until that happens, you know, the repairs are going to be slow. I'm not going to lie here. You're, you know, especially down there at Riverview Park, where 70% of our trails sustained major reconstruction damage. I mean, it's going to have to be totally restored, 70% of those trails down there. So you're looking, you know, 6 months, potentially even longer, for some of those repairs to be ongoing. We don't have that kind of budget. Some of these repairs that we can make at our level, at the parks level, but the majority of them are probably going to have to be contracted out. And then, you know, we're going to have to, the city's going to have to be looking for reimbursement later on down the road. So it is going to be a very time-consuming process. So I just want to, you know, let everyone know that the range is open currently. The rifle and pistol range is open. Like I said, I opened it about a week and a half later. People were chomping out the bit to get back there. Matter of fact, the day of the flood on the 8th of January, when we were getting hit the hardest, I had the sheriff come in and tell me that he had to kick several people out of the range. So on the day of the flood, people were back there, diehard shooters, and they're back there shooting. And a lot of the locals were, I don't know if they were locals or from the outside area or not, but they weren't too happy that we had the range closed off, because they decided to go ahead and shoot at my stop sign. So, but that's how passionate some people are, I guess, about getting back there and using our facilities. So, like I said, it is open now. And as soon as we can, you know, start repairing a lot of these damages, and, you know, we'll let the public know. I don't have a time estimate on the repairs to the rifle and pistol range itself, but like I said, it is usable. It is open. You can get back there safely and use that facility. Barring any questions, that's all I have. Yes, sir.
That made me think about all those new bike trails that you guys have been created up the northwest of town.
Is it, you talking the linear park paths, you know, along the freeway, or?
Yeah. Well, no, the ones
or,
that
out like Kings, Ash Canyon,
yeah,
on the west side.
Right. Did they get damaged badly also?
Like I said, there were damages to pretty much every trail within the city. Some suffered more than others. I haven't heard too much about the trails on the west side of the city. Most of the damages that we sustained to the trails were on the east side of the city. Like I said, Riverview Park, Empire, the linear ditch path, yeah, the all those trails.
Mexican.
So the at the dam, there was a portion of the trail that was washed away as well.
How about Silver Saddle?
So Silver Saddle itself is okay. Mainly the damages were to the trails.
So I did get an email from somebody asking, and I actually referred to you, Vern, asking about damages assessed on Ash Canyon Road going up to Hobart. Just, have you guys had a chance to assess that yet?
Public Works may have done so, and I would actually have to go into the program and take a look. It would indicate if so.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Question, getting back to the shooting range and the grants. I know the monies came from the PR fund, correct? The Pittman Robertson Fund of NDOW?
Yeah, it's their Hunter Education
right.
Safety
exactly.
Program.
That's right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I think in past discussions with the Hunter Education folks, there were multiple years worth of potential improvements out there. And I think in the past there was even discussions of a Hunter Education classroom out there.
That's correct.
And other things that deal with Hunter Education out there. Can you brief us on what your plans are in the future going forward regarding Hunter Ed?
Yeah, that is something that we've had discussions with, not only at this commission, but also with the user groups out there. That is certainly, now that we've got the gate in and now that we've got the vault toilets in, that's going to be something that we're going to be looking at here in the near future. Now, what is the near future? It's going to be a little bit of time. We're going to have to spend some money up front or somehow work with the Nevada Department of Wildlife to actually spend some dollars on design of the actual structure itself and what we want to do. So we can start putting together actual costs for other grants that will come down the road in the future. So do you
see any potential grants this coming year cycle or not?
No. Right now what we're looking at for any money that's kind of, we want to complete this bulk toilet project. And until it's completed, we're not quite sure where we're going to be money-wise. And so once we find out what that is, that's the first step. The next step that we're looking at is there's some real physical improvements that we do need to make out there. So between the foundation and the clubs and what little money we may have left over from these past two projects, I think the intent right now is just to look at doing some improvements out there to the range that are desperately needed. So that's the current thinking right now.
Okay. As a hunter ed instructor, it would be nice if we had a facility with the city on a reoccurring basis that we can hold classes. Currently, we are holding them at the sheriff's office, and sometimes it's available, sometimes it's not. Sometimes the high school ROTC building is available, sometimes it's not. So I'm just encouraging, the sooner we can move along with that, the more I, as an instructor, would appreciate it.
And it is on our radar screen, and so, but at this time, there really isn't any time frame or in order to get that thing, at least, you know, in the next year or two.
Can you expand on any of the improvements that you're making out of the, you guys want to make out of the range?
I know that the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club, they want to get some more signage out there. They have the one sign and on the front of the bay that talks, it lists the rules. But of course, you're only seeing that if you walk up the steps. If you go up the ramp to the side, you totally miss the rules. So I know that they want to create some more signage. Matter of fact, we just had a meeting with them today, and they did specifically mention that. And there is some money left over after this grant money, the money that was raised by the various organizations, various clubs that Vern mentioned. So there is some money left over for that will probably be earmarked towards that, but we're not talking a whole lot. What you're talking about is you're talking about a significant amount of money to build a facility out there, which I totally understand is definitely needed, is part of the master plan, and that master plan, I don't know how long ago that was created, so that is definitely long overdue, but it is going to take some time, and it is, you know, I'm sure there's more grant opportunities out there. Matter of fact, NRA, I'm sure, has some grants that we could probably tap into. So that is something we'll definitely look into, as well as what else did they mention? Some target?
The target lines that target are out there lines. On the rifle range itself have been pretty well shot up over the years. The concrete that was out there has been pretty well damaged from the shooting. So that was one of the other things. They talked about some improvements maybe at the shooting bays, the pistol bays. I'm sorry?
Yeah, the pistol bays.
The pistol bays as well. So that's still kind of ebbing and flowing as far as what they're going to do, but the city just doesn't have the money, unfortunately, to go out and take care of some of those needed repairs and or replacements that we have to do out at the range. And so with what little money we will have left over from Question 18 after these two grant projects and whatever the clubs can raise, we will try to be as judicious as possible with the expenditures of those funds so we can get as much as we can for the dollars we have.
Perfect. Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being here, and nice to meet you, Steve.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
All right. So carrying right along to item number 8. Again, this is an informational-only presentation. By Rachel Schneider. She's here. Is it? Hi, Rachel. Come on up.
And if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Chairman, I could introduce this.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah, since you know a little bit more about this item. And Tamar, just for the record, public comment when we first started, I don't think Mr. Bailey mentioned his name, so just for the record, C.K. Bailey is the one that made public comment, just so you know. I'm sure you would have figured it out, but...
I don't even recognize the voice.
All right, so Mr. Martin, if you may, please.
Mr. Chairman and members and guests, I'd like to introduce Rachel Snyder. She is with the Information Technology Department of Carson City, and she contacted me about a month and a half ago, saying that the city would like to elevate public awareness of mule deer in the community and to provide outreach education. And so Rachel brought myself and Jessica Hite from Endow together, mm-hmm. and we have come up with a pretty good plan that Rachel has been implementing, and she has now, with the backing and the instruction of the city manager, she has moved mule deer up onto the Carson City's webpage, and you can get to it just by going to community, and right there is a section on mule deer. And with Endow, they have connected their whole group of resources into that. Mm-hmm. So with that, Rachel, I asked Rachel to come tonight and give a little demo on how that works and let you look at it on her little tiny screen. So Rachel, thank you for coming.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to pass this
around.
My name is Rachel Schneider. I'm with Carson City Information Technology, for the record. And so we created a page designated on Carson.org, and it's Carson.org/deer is the user-friendly URL if you want to access the page. I'm currently working with Nevada Department of Wildlife as far as constructing information and what kind of future campaigns we'll get together doing, hosting on government social media outlets as well, as far as publishing information related to our resident deer in our area. We don't really have any data as far as what our population is, what we're looking at, and that's what Doug and I spoke with Jessica about getting for future reference so that our residents are aware of the population we have and how to deal with it. I guess according to Jessica Hite and I in our conversation, she said since there's not much to do, maybe publishing a campaign saying, well, they're here and this is how you can deal with it. Any thoughts?
So yeah. The website she has showing there, that's actually And Rachel, there's no way to turn it in and put it on this.
Yeah, that's it.
Can we project it up here? Is there any way? No.
No, it's not hooked up.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. So if you could just bring that down and show.
Is it touch screen here?
Mr. Yannick.
Rachel, when you talk about the deer population numbers, are you talking about central Carson City, all of Carson City County? Just how big an area are you talking about when you're going to put some numbers together?
In and around, whatever data we can get.
We're
urban
deer.
Yeah.
Urban deer, not rural deer.
Okay.
And one of the things that Rachel and Jessica and I talked about is trying to get Endow to actually figure out a way to do a population survey in the city. I've heard estimates from 200 to 500 that live here as year-round residents, and I believe that. I mean, you just look around, you will find them always here and present. And so it would be helpful to know what is our resident population and what are the transients that come in here. You put 4 feet of snow, 6 feet of snow on Snow Valley Peak, and they all come down. Plus, we have the ones that live on Prison Hill
not Prison Hill, they're there too, but on the hill above the cemetery. They're there all the time too. And part of what brought this whole thing together, and I like your banner on here.
Yeah, I fixed
absolutely
it.
Absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, you can see what Rachel's done. But part of what led to this was there was a gentleman on the west side of town, actually just a little bit from the governor's mansion, two blocks from the governor's mansion. So he wasn't up in your part of the world where you see him and they live under your basement, or in your basement. He actually went out in his backyard at night because his dog was barking and there was a heck of a commotion. And there was a fully mature buck had his dog cornered. And then he tried to scare it away from the deer away from his dog. And the buck attacked him, came within 2 feet of him, and he was able to raise up his hands. The buck turned around, and it was a good four buck. He turned around and took out the guy's fence. And you know, it really plays to the point and really brings the point home that those animals, while they're beautiful to look at, they can be dangerous. And people need to know during rutting season, a deer can be crazy. So we talked to that individual homeowner, and he wanted us to come out and take care of the problem, which we can't do. But we educated him as to what he can do. He can have certainly higher fences, which cost money. He can certainly put in motion sensor lights, which don't cost a lot of money, and that will help some. And he can also buy an air horn. And, you know, he can make it uncomfortable for him, but you have to ask, and this is what we asked him, why is that mule deer wanting to live in your backyard in the first place? Well, it either has shelter, or it has food, or it has both. So it could be. So, you know, he's going to be working on trying to remove the shelter and making it so it's not so user-friendly for that mule deer. And that's what we want to educate the rest of the public about. It's really, you saw the picture the other day in the paper of that really pretty fawn, and it's in the paper, I mean, doe, and that's great. However, remember, they're wild, and they're alive, and they're here. And that's what Rachel's doing. Mm-hmm. So that's why I asked you to come tonight, Rachel.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, 2 weeks ago when we had that heavy rain, the first day of the heavy rain.
Yeah, which
day? And so my wife comes out of the house, and we have a sensor light in the front. The sensor light goes on. This big doe gets up that was under the eave of our house right in front. And as she gets up, my wife didn't realize it at first. She turned on the water faucet. There was a spigot where she was in the brush that she was in. And then while she was getting up, I don't know how she did it, but she opened the faucet because my wife wouldn't have known it had she not heard the water running. And so at least my wife put two and two together and went and turned the faucet. Since then, I put a cover so the deer can't turn it back on. But I'll tell you, they are looking not only for food, but habitat to protect themselves in out of the weather.
Yeah, absolutely. So please, everyone, please look at our what the city has done for a website. And
it's mobile friendly, too, so you can look on it with your phone.
Yeah.
So.
And I know Rachel's always, you know, looking. If you have a comment that can make it even better, we did talk, and the city is going to link to NDOW, and NDOW is going to be doing a whole thing about it's soon going to be fawning season, what to look for in fawning season, what to look for warning signs on a doe. If you see a doe prancing its feet, and if you see a doe's ears coming forward, that's time not to go looking around in the bushes. And then also, NDOW is going to have a link to bears because, you know, they're going to be coming out of hibernation, despite the fact that there's a ton of snow up there. They will be coming out of hibernation. They will be hungry. And if you look at NDOW's video on that with Jake Weller that they did, the filming that they did was only, as the crow flies, 5 miles from here, where that sow and her cubs were. So they're here, and they will be coming out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Green.
I really like that. That's
Thank you.
And to head on to the bear thing, a mirror programs of the same thing to do with bear and coyotes. Coyotes are here, and they're not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
People need to learn to live around them, you learn to be afraid of them, but not in a fearful manner.
Uh huh. Yeah. Anything we can do to help our residents navigate to proper information. Again, we're going to keep rerouting as much as our traffic on our website to Nevada Department of Wildlife because they're the experts.
Yeah.
I'm just an IT.
But I do appreciate you tapping into that resource.
Yeah.
They have those per diem or what are they intermittent positions.
Uh-huh.
That's all they deal with is nuisance wildlife, right?
Yeah.
So it's great to tap into that. The only thing I will leave you with, if I may, is you had talked about campaigns that you know, we could do in the future.
Yeah.
And if NDAL's not coming up with, they should come up with a ton of different things that you could do.
Yeah.
But please bring that to our attention.
Sure.
I think that the campaign centered around fawning season should be something that we advocate doing. Something around the rutting season as well, and something about if you're in an area that's prone to deer and the potential of having fawns in your junipers, and they can be in the most conspicuous places. Literally, I saw one bedded in a barberry bush, which you would have never thought, right?
Uh-huh.
But what a mate! You know, the mother knew that would be a safe place for her, for that baby,
uh-huh.
And at night, she was coming and taking that baby out, feeding her, and then putting her back in there.
Huh.
And you would have never known that until the homeowner went out and started pruning that bush, right? And mom came from across the street in the neighbor's house underneath a whole bunch of a stand of evergreens and confronted the homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be in the most conspicuous places. I think we need to really highlight the safe, first the site safety, of public safety, right, and animal safety, and then go out and try and educate in other ways as well. So I know there's groups that want to get involved. So anyway.
That can be tied to fire safety, too.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the bushes back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be able to see around.
Yeah, and I'll just leave you with, we talked about bears, and I don't want to get going too much on this, but I got a call from somebody out at the List Ranch just over here, going up over Eagle Valley, over Lakeview Hill, and they said they spotted a bear roaming out there yesterday, and so which surprises me. And so I gave them Carl Lackey's information, who's our bear specialist for the Department of Wildlife.
No,
I don't know what came of that, but when you get warmer temperatures, and it was with the atmospheric rivers that we've been having bring warmer temperatures and. Wildlife do crazy things, So, not that aren't typical, right? Would you guys agree with that? Okay.
Somewhat related, leaves being up in Lakeview, we spotted mountain lions chasing coyotes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have everything. So, I mean, this morning in Lampas Field, there were 7 coyotes pouncing on mice and voles because the voles are out full force right now,
mm-hmm.
and there were 7 different coyotes in one field in the middle of town prouncing on those. So they're right all amongst us. And we had our gate open, and in the snow, dog prints in the snow, I looked at him, like, my goodness, that's a coyote trying to get in our backyard. So, okay, so we're gonna carry on here. Item number 9, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being here. Yeah. And appreciate your efforts.
Yeah, and Doug will be with me every step of the way, so anytime we go in a different direction or change anything, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I assume you can track hits.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, our analytics. Yeah. We'll be able to determine how many people. Not yet, because I haven't publicized it yet. I was waiting to present it to you tonight, and then we'll be issuing actual public information through our social media outlets and whatever public channel outlets we have shortly.
Okay.
As soon as Jessica comes back with some more stuff for me to work with.
It would be great to get, you know, maybe even a quarterly update on how many people are going to that, you know, so we know.
Yeah, sure.
We can help us really gear where our education needs to be,
yeah.
Our efforts need to be.
Definitely.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, moving on, agenda item number 9. This is a possible action item, and Doug, you're going to have to help me here. These are all of the consent agenda items, correct? That we have the. Do you usually read this?
I usually read that. It makes it easier for you.
Perfect. So I'm going to go ahead and follow suit. This is Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife Consent Agenda Item. For additional information, these action items are going to be considered within this action item. You can visit Department of Wildlife's website, and the website is on there. The items agendized hereafter as 9A through 9K are consent agenda items. They are considered routine and may be acted upon by the advisory board to manage wildlife with one action and without extensive hearing. Although a member of the advisory board may request an item to be pulled for separate discussion and action, the advisory board chair retains discretion in deciding whether or not to pull an item from the consent agenda. There will be no public comment on any item unless the item is pulled for separate discussion and or action. So with that, I'll open it back up to the board. Are there any items on this from 9A to 9K that any board member would like to pull?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would like to pull item number 9B, special assistance. And I would also like to pull item number, where's the big name season?
That would be 20, oh, I'm sorry,
9F.
9F.
9.
Oh, no.
9E.
I apologize.
That's okay. Those are the two that I would like to discuss further.
Any further? I would like to pull for discussion. Let's see here. I should have marked this. I apologize. Which item was the?
What's the topic?
What was the item on? Hunting near dwellings and residential areas.
That was an informational item, and if you want to discuss that, Mr. Chairman, that would be under item number 10.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. All right. So I will go ahead and we'll poll. Does that require action?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, you can just pull those two. And what I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, you might ask for a motion to approve all but those two.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. So I'll ask for a motion to approve all the consent agenda items except for 9B and 9E for discussion and public comment.
So moved. So moved.
Second.
So we have a first and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. So let's take 9B. If you want to discuss that and introduce that, Vice Chairman Martin.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman, Mr. Chairman. This particular item I really like, and I totally support it, and it is basically. A regulation change that would allow a person with certain disabilities to allow another person to assist him. And basically it basically allows a person who will obtain a special assistance permit to have an authorized
designated licensed assistant to help him. And help him would be, for example, if he wounds an animal and he is, as it states here, is a paraplegic and can't chase the animal down himself, that the special assistants could dispatch that animal so it doesn't get away. So I really support the concept, and I only look at Section 4, and that's who can obtain such a tag, I mean special assistance permit. And it's a person who holds a tag, which is appropriate, and then he can apply for a special assistance permit. And then they have three criteria for which special assistance criteria can be given. And one is he is a paraplegic. Two, he has had one or both legs amputated. And or C, has suffered a paralysis of one or both legs, which severely impedes the holder's walking. And I think those are all great, but I don't think it's inclusive enough, because I think there's other types of special assistance needs besides just legs. For example, I know that people with sighting issues, I don't know completely blind at times, but I know people who are visually impaired can hunt with special, with really good optics, but those people, if they shot something, would they be able to run, if it was wounded, would they be able to run through the sagebrush and get to it and dispatch it? Couldn't they also benefit from designated licensed assistant? And I'm sure there's 100 different types of afflictions or restrictions or disabilities besides just leg disabilities. And so I really like this, and I just think that we could recommend to the commission that we support it and its intent, but maybe to make it a little bit more inclusive for other types of handicaps or disabilities or impairments.
Okay.
So that's my discussion.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I know somebody who has a situation like this. It'd be nice to see a provision like this added to it that would let anybody with a impairment, not necessarily disability, go before who an advising officer and get that permission. Like an example, the one I'm thinking of is I know a guy that's a dwarf. And he likes to bow hunt with a crossbow. Many, many places he's not allowed to do that because it's not a long one. And that's just an example of something, but that could be made. That's the sort of thing that would have to be made on an individual basis, but somebody within this could maybe, there should maybe be an appointing authority that could look at those individual cases.
In weapon class. You're talking about weapon class.
Yes, because it's a modification to that, but it's for somebody that can't, you know. And that's not considered necessarily a disability, but it will allow him to participate in something he enjoys.
Uh-huh. And I think, you know, I think that's a great issue too, but I think that's slightly separate from what we're discussing here in this regulation.
I do too, and I think that, okay, Mr. Yannick.
We've seen a lot of, issues like this in the last 10, 12 months where people who have disabilities, they're allowed to, have special conveyances, people to help them and assist them out in the field because they're not mobile, and they're not ambulatory and it's kind of hard for them to get around. And we talked about previously, are we going to fill the field with friends and helpers? And what's that going to do for the rest of the hunters that want to go out there and use some of that territory when you're going to have 20, you could have 10 people, 15 people, 5 people, you know, trying to assist somebody, and I'm all for that, you know, but we get to a point where we're going to make it less desirable for hunters who don't have, you know, a handicap.
Yeah, I gotta say that I don't know if I agree with that. I think that we currently have that, right? I mean, anybody can bring, you could bring 15, 20 people along with you on a hunt, and you know, as long as you're abiding by the law and being ethical, and there's nothing wrong with it, you know? Nevada's a very big place where a lot of times you go out and you don't see anybody, right? A lot of times you go to an area like a depredation area where you see tons of people. So I think that, you know, just by way of history, I just want to make sure everybody understands. This is a result last session's, a bill that was introduced last session, I believe it was AB 136, am I right, Doug? You recall?
Well, it's now chapter 502.
Right.
Yes, I don't remember that.
Well, I think that's what it was. And so what I was pleased to see is that in that bill, they wanted to give a waiver opportunity for hunter education. And that got shot down big time, I think, by everybody, just from the public safety concern that I think everybody, conservationists, sportsmen, every group had with that, right? But they did give direction to the Department of Wildlife to go back and create this. And I think that the Department of Wildlife did a great job in taking that direction from the legislature and from the sponsors of that bill and put it into this bill. So I think they wanted to be, I don't know for sure, but everything I like about it, can we add other disabilities to the potential of, you know, to this regulation? We can. One of the concerns that I have on it, if we can, is in Section 5, under Section 5.3d as a dog. I was a little unclear, and maybe you guys can clarify this for me. Section 5 is a holder of a special assistance permit who is in the field. It tells all the things that that person needs to have, right? In Section 3, a designated licensed assistant, subsection 3, a designated licensed assistant who is in the field to assist the holder of the special assistance permit during a hunt must have his or her hunting license as number one, and a special assistance permit in his or her possession. B, may not use a weapon other than the weapon authorized by the tag of the holder of the special assistance permit. C, except as required to perform any task authorized in paragraphs D and E, which is what I'm getting to here, must be accompanied at all times by in the hunt by the holder of the special use permit, and then D, may if he or she has a good faith belief that the tag holder of a special assistance permit has lawfully wounded a big game animal or a big game mammal, discharge his or her weapon to assist in taking of the big game mammal. Now, does that, I guess that there's a little confusion there, I think, that does that individual have to use the tag holder's firearm, which is stated above, or can they have an additional firearm on their person to go and dispatch that animal?
It's not clear.
It's not very clear. And so my suggestion is that we point that out to the commission. You know, when you make a special regulation like this, you know, it just is what it is. People are going to look at that, and they are going to try and manipulate that. And you're going to have, my fear is you're going to have groups of individuals with multiple firearms. It's going to be a nightmare for law enforcement in the field. I'll tell you that right now. And we don't want to put those fine folks in any kind of harm's way, I don't think. And we have, you know, multiple people carrying firearms. How do you ascertain without visually seeing it whether or not somebody else shot the animal or something like that, you know? So You know, I would definitely like to bring that up to the.
Yeah, you read this and it doesn't say, it says about the weapon authorized by the tag of the holder.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, any thoughts on that before we press on here and open it?
You know, this is written by Chief Warden Currency.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he's going to be giving the presentation, and I think, you know, I believe it'd be a question to bring up to him or something that you see. But I mean, if he's comfortable with this, because he's had the experience in the field dealing with regulations and stuff, and that's when I was working and I'd write regulations, or what really would give me was somebody else would write the regulations, and then I'd get it and start going over it like crazy because, you know, trying to find all these different
nuances
where the arguments that the wardens are going to have to be the ones that are going to have to make those and things to the district attorney's office.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just kind of want to chip in here and provide a little bit of input, especially since, you know, I mean, I actually have personal experience drafting LCB regulations since that was my prior life, and certainly have been involved in the drafting of some of these, you know, Wildlife Commission and now regulations myself. I can see here by looking at this draft copy that we have, this is an LCB draft of a revised proposed regulation, which means it's already been vetted through the system. It means it's gone through the entire LCB drafting process. And I can tell you, just based on my kind of cursory review of that provision, you know, from a legal perspective, it does read fairly clearly to me. I would say that if you want to provide a recommendation at the next workshop and provide input with respect to clarification, I would suggest that to be more along the parameters of you know, do we want to limit it so that, you know, we want to specify, for example, the designated licensed assistant would not be able to or is prohibited from discharging the tag holder's firearm, rather than expanding it to say that you may also use that person's firearm, because the plain reading of that, I think, from a legal perspective, is already pretty plain. And I guess my statement is that if you were to make that comment and say it's not clear without providing additional guidance for the clarification, it would go back to LCB and they wouldn't actually change it. It would just be the same provision. That's just based on my personal experience.
And Mr. Chairman, just to add to that, I've circled B and I've circled D, and I've drawn an arrow between B, where it says may not use a weapon other than the tag holder's, and down below I circled his or her weapon. Now, are they referring to his or her
tag holder,
or are they referring to his or her here? So, Dan, I understand why the chairman's raising that question, and I know this has already been vetted twice. So, the one thing I think our board can certainly do is just give the commission our opinion that seems to be in conflict with each other, and I would certainly like to make a motion that we support. First of all, I would like to make a motion that we support this concept and we support this regulation. Secondly, I would like to, ask the commission to be more inclusive regarding disabilities and not just keep it to leg disabilities. And third, I would like to encourage the commission to look at 3B and 3D to make sure there is not a conflict between what B says and D says.
Okay. So before we take a vote on that,
we'll have a second, and then we'll discuss.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. You do here.
Sign up.
So you had a motion.
So the motion was to support this this regulation, and to ask the commission to consider more inclusive language in section four, as well as take a look at sections
5, 3B, and 3D.
D.
Because we see that 3B and 3D may conflict with each other.
Conflict. So did you get that, Tamar?
3B, 3C, and 3D?
3B and 3D may conflict with each other.
And 3D.
Right.
So that's the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Yannick. Before we take a vote, any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just point of, since you're new, typically when we have a motion now, we invite public comment.
Ah, perfect. Perfect. So before we have any further discussion on that, right?
Before. Now is the time.
Okay, so let's open
it
up.
A good time.
Perfect. Let's open up to public comment on this. Do we have anybody from the public?
Yes, for the record, Fred Volz. A few observations in listening to your conversation about this. First, despite LCB having looked at this twice, they're not the ones who are going to be enforcing it. So legalities are one consideration. However, out in the field, trying to administer a policy that has way too many exceptions and inclusions is going to be a nightmare. So it would be much better to err on the side of caution and make this very broad and subject to the interpretation of the game wardens. Secondly, one of the problems that seems to be continuing through the whole discussion about this, and it's been quite lengthy, how many people do we have in the state who would be affected by this? We're creating this regulation, and I have not heard any estimate of the number of people with tags who would be impacted by this. And so it seems like you're creating this massive policy, both the cabs and the commission, for what could be 10, 20 people.
Maybe.
And I really don't understand that there's nothing in the ADA that requires this. It's like you're trying to create a demand for something when it really isn't there. And if somebody, to use the example of the blind person, if they can't see to be hunting, they're really not able to hunt. That's the bottom line of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holes. Any other further public comment?
C.K. Bailey, for the record. It's a very interesting item. I think that you're right by looking into having the I's dotted and the T's crossed on something like this, because just lightly, if I had to use somebody else's weapon to put down an animal that I had no idea about this weapon, could be exciting. So I think having your T's crossed and your I's dotted, I think it's a reasonable request that you're making to have this laid out. Thank you. Does that make sense?
Any other further public comment? Hearing none, we'll go. I just want, before we take a vote on this, I just want to, from Dan, I just want to make sure, legally, are you good with us
going to
the commission and making those?
I think legally making that recommendation is absolutely fine. You know, the point that I was trying to make was just, you know, for purposes of being more productive and efficient in making that recommendation, just kind of outlining your parameters is how I meant it, how I described it, what exactly it is the recommendation is in terms of allowing the assistant to use, you know, the tag holder's weapon or not, rather than just simply saying that that one provision standing alone is maybe unclear, because if you read that out of context, based on the plain meaning, there is no restriction.
Perfect.
So if you provide that sort of a parameter as a guidance, that makes it so that the workshop becomes more productive.
I think that's what the intent is. So, would you agree?
Absolutely.
All right. So we have a first and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Aye. Motion carries. All right. And then we pulled 9E as well. So do you want to start that off, Vice Chairman Martin?
Yeah. One of the things the department would like
is they would like to have how we acted on each of the species going through it. And Mr. Chairman, you get to do this. So lucky you. In the past, I have gone through this by species, and if we have no comment, then we are, in fact, supporting what the department is recommending.
Okay.
And so I don't know what you would like to do, Mr. Chairman, but I do have a couple of particular seasons where I would like to discuss them. One is in mule deer, and one of them is in elk.
Okay.
And I've looked at all the others myself, so... we've already, just to let you know, we've already gone through black bear and lion because they were separate items, and we've already given our support to them because we didn't pull them. So the first two are already there. So basically, what I suggest is that rather than going through each individual, you might want to see if any members of the board have anything to discuss with, for example, animals.
Right. So let's I agree with that. So let's open it up to, does any member of the board have, let's start with antelope, since that is at the top of the regulations that we were mailed, or that we were given, or proposed regulations we were given. So any issues to antelope?
And Mr. Chairman, I believe it's Mike, right?
Cody, for the record,
Cody Schroeder. Yeah, he is the deer biologist for the state, and so I thought you might want to introduce him.
Okay, so Cody, appreciate you being here. And did you invite Cody, or did you come
on? No, comes on his own because he's here to support everything that he's recommending in here, correct?
That's correct.
Perfect. All right, well, appreciate you being here, Cody. So when we get to that, we will ask for maybe some questions for you as well. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. So let's start with antelope, if we can. Okay. Any issues with any of the antelope seasons that are on the, that are being proposed on the list? I will just point out that they did make some changes to the, as you can see, to one of the horns longer than ears, any legal weapon. They actually extended the season, and we'll see that a lot in some of the antelopes. And then also with the muzzleloader, they changed the seasons there from to start a lot earlier. So they'll be running in conjunction, it looks like, with right after some of the other seasons. So anything in there? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and mark that we agree with that. Let's go to elk. Do we have anything for elk?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of things on elk, and mine are regarding hunt 4151, antlers,
any legal weapon?
Any legal weapon, as well as the muzzleloader, as well as the archery.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Cody, I know you're Cody, but one of the past explanations that I've heard, I believe I've heard from Mr. Fox, is that they like to take and offer during the rut season a hunt, every year they rotate a rut hunt through through the any legal weapon hunt. And this year they have three that really don't really amount to much. First of all is 051, which is a brand new recruitment herd. And Cody, I don't know if you know, but I think last year there were even less than five tags in 051. Is that right?
For the record, Cody Schroeder, Department of Wildlife. I actually don't know the specific number of tags last year, but it was a low number. I'm pretty sure it was below 10. So.
And I think I know it was under 10, but I think it was under 5.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the second one is 065, which is always identified as a low probability hunt. It's not
much of an opportunity to hunters. And then the other one is 091, which actually runs in conjunction with the state of Utah, and that's the pilot peace hunt, correct, Cody?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so I just looked at that, and I just see that there's almost no opportunity for rifle hunters during the rut season. And since Cody's here, I'll ask him if he knows why that is.
Yeah, I mean, we decided to revise the hunt. Well, we have a brand new hunt guideline, so one of the tenets in there was to reduce hunting during the rut season with an efficient weapon where possible and to be as consistent as possible throughout the state with some of these hunts. So the rotating rut hunt was one that was obviously we don't offer that anywhere else, and so we felt like we would, you know, in vein of consistency, get rid of it. However, as you mentioned, we do have some rut hunts in there, and that's pretty much the pioneering herds, the new herd like 051, just to basically stack the deck for the hunters to try to have an advantage during that period because we anticipate being low success.
Well, I appreciate that, and so what I heard is that the department wants to move away from having a rotating, or the department is recommending moving away from a rotating rifle line.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. So that doesn't mean we have to agree with that.
That's true.
And the other thing is, Cody, while you're here, could you give me a little bit of background on, or do you know, on the 076 through 081 bull to cow ratios? Aren't they some of the highest in the state?
I actually don't know off the top of my head what the bull to cow ratios in there are.
Well, I've heard in the past that they exceed 50 to 100.
It's possible. Yeah, that's within the range of a lot of our modeled bull ratios.
A lot of them are in that.
Yep.
And so I just personally think that we could combine the desire to lower bull to cow ratios with giving additional opportunities to enjoy a rut hunt with lowered criteria, lowered quotas when quotas come around for those rut hunts. And I don't know how many of you remember hunting for elk 25, 30 years ago, but I do, and it's different than hunting elk in Nevada now. Hunting elk in Nevada now in many places, like 076 through 081, I think last year there were 150 early season tags and 150 late season tags, something like that. And it's not that hunt where you and 10 other guys are in the rut in a huge area. So I really think, Mr. Chairman, that I would like to have multiple seasons of rifle hunts where the department can later come back. So I'm not looking at changing these seasons. I'm looking at adding alternatives to at least three of these units for a early hunt. And that would be September 17th through September 30th.
For rifle.
For any legal weapon. Exactly. And then if they were set, then they can come back in the quotas and put a very small quota in it, or they could put a zero quota in it if they don't think that the opportunity should be there. But I would like to have the season opportunity, at least, I would like to at least see the seasons here. And specifically, I think there's several of them that would be good for that. I know there's a huge elk population in 061. I know there's a really large elk population in 076, et cetera. And I know there's a significant population in 072, et cetera. So if each one of those three we propose the commission consider adding an alternate season in those three units.
So let's, so you're saying 076?
076, et cetera. 076, 077.
076 to 07, oh, 081, right?
Right. 072 to 074. And 061 to and 071. And you can add 062 to 068 to that. Those are the largest expanding elk herds in the state of Nevada, as far as I know.
Okay. So
I know Mr. Schroeder has a comment
there. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just say this about those, some of those run hunts. One thing to keep in mind is, as the regulations are currently with incentive tags, if there is an open season, some of those incentive tag holders can hunt during those periods. And so part of the reason probably that we haven't had some of the rut hunts in the past were some of these areas that you're talking about, like in 07, Area 7, where we have a lot of landowner incentive tags, and potentially that might open up a lot more tags to those bulls during that season. So I'll just throw that out there.
I like what you just said, and I agree with what you just said, but maybe we can recommend the commission that landowner incentive tags don't apply during those special rut hunt seasons.
And I think that's, you're on the right track there with where we would like to go in the future.
And you weren't here 30 years ago, I know that, because of how old you are, hunting-wise. But they were incredible hunts 30 years ago.
Okay. So any further discussion on that before I call for a motion? Okay. So hearing done, I'll call for a motion to...
Well, I'd like to make a motion
okay.
that we request the commission to add four alternate seasons, an alternate season in 061, 071, an alternate season in 062 through 068, an alternate season in 076, oh, I'm sorry, 072 to 074, and an alternate season to 076 through 081.
Did you get all that,
mm-hmm.
Tamar?
I have it recorded.
All right, because I'm going to rely on you to get that to me.
And that we request the commission, as part of this motion, that we request the commission to consider that alternate season for a resident non-landowner tag rut hunt. Is that, Cody, do you think that captures the essence of that? Of keeping it out of the landowner?
Well, I believe so, although I don't know if we... The commission would honestly have to, they would have to probably change the policy on incentive tags fundamentally to exclude.
And we can request it.
Yes.
Okay.
If there's vested where the value of that tag is for the landowner.
Well, you know what?
Too bad.
All right, so. All right, so.
But it is what it is.
Wait, hold on a minute.
We need a second.
So, yes, so we have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
Second.
A second by Mr. Yannick. So we will call for public comment. Any public comment? Seeing none or hearing none, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay. Okay, so let's go. So about everything else, no other further issues with elk? Anybody? Before we move on? Okay, seeing none, we'll continue on. That was 41, what hunt was that?
What's that?
41-51, right. Okay.
So when you're going to have to send that into the commission to the department.
Gotcha.
So you're going to have to write something there.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the Nelson Desert Bighorn. Any on that? Anybody? Okay, seeing none. Carrying on. California Bighorn Sheep. Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep. Mountain Goat. Resident Junior Mule Deer.
I really don't have anything on the junior mule deer other than just a comment. And I think it's time to consider the department, the commission to consider not extending the resident youth hunt to either sex. We have controlled hunts for does, for antlerless deer, and I've heard that up to 25% of the youth tags are on does, and we have population concerns in many areas, and so I'm just suggesting that at some time in the future we need to have the commission tackle that issue of continuing youth hunts with those. That's not part of the seasons, and I don't know where that belongs.
Cody, do you have any thoughts on that or any comment on that? Anything you can give us on that? Do you find, is there any, I mean, in your estimation, is there an issue with the amount of does that are being taken by junior?
No, I don't have any.
For a concern?
Yeah, I don't have any issue with that. I mean, we do look into it every year. You know, on any given one unit, it might fluctuate, you know, towards 25%, but it's usually well below that. We do take it into consideration for the antlerless quota as well. We actually look at the numbers. It goes
so
each doe that's
killed. You decrease the antlerless tags based on the years prior.
Yes, in effect, you know, when we roll up our hunt data at the end of the year, we basically count all the reported harvests, whether it's a buck or a doe, from anybody, from a junior or an adult. That goes into the model, you know, that we then make the quota recommendation off of. So it is accounted for. It's, from our perspective, it's considered more of a, you know, an opportunity to get youth out in the field, more in line with providing, you know, meat for the family and things like that instead of hanging a trophy on the wall. And so, plus, it's more successful in general when you have the option of hunting a female or a male during the hunting season. So from our perspective, it's more about opportunity, and we account for the female loss in the quota process.
Any other further discussion on that?
Yeah. On unit 015, I noticed the late hunts are in bold. Has that just been changed to that?
Yes, that's because we actually we make the junior hunts all basically in line with what the adult hunts, the synchronous, and we.
I noticed that also in the adult hunts.
Yeah, so we're recommending a change in that season date this year, 015, to that different structure to be more in line with the other hunts.
Yeah,
try to increase the success.
I try to make this comment earlier. These particularly in 021, the late, any legal weapon, particularly for the juniors, I really like that season there. And I know when I first came here that used to be earlier in the year, like around, I think it is around 1st of December, but didn't always extend all the way to January 1st. And the point that I want to make on that is that allows for particularly in the youth hunting season over the Christmas break for schools. And I know my son has had more than one tag in 021, and that really helped out as far as him being able to get out and hunt and things. And it also, there's one season it put me on the top of the dog skins in the dead of winter when I would never be up there for any other reason. And I was glad I
was able to do it because, like I just said, I wouldn't have gone up there for any other reason. We were virtually as high as you can go into the dog skins. We had to walk up there, you know, in search of deer, and there was a really nice buck up there, although it was a 1,000 yards away, and there's no way we could sneak up on it. But, I mean, it's that type of experience that I can say I never would have had if it wasn't for these seasons like that and things. And again, the most part I like about it is that you don't have to. My first year of taking my son out hunting, we had to yank him out of school for a week. Here we had like 2 weeks of hunting without even
instruction
or education.
Yeah, I mean, we left the any legal weapon in there for that 015. It's just when we started looking at our hunt success on archery and muzzleloader during that 015, and that deer herd hasn't been doing as well. It's an interstate migratory herd as well. It was almost 0%, so we felt moving them earlier, take advantage of the resident population, and probably we'll see the quotas go down a little bit on recommendations there. So, but still have the opportunity to hunt during Christmas for youth.
Okay, so did we want to make a motion to bring that to the commission? Okay, so no changes to or no comments to resident junior mule deer. Everybody good with that? Okay, resident mule deer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and since we only get to look at seasons now every 2 years. Now's the time to discuss this. Cody, the purpose of the late hunt on mule deer late hunts, can you give me your or the department's perspective on the late hunts?
I'll have to get more specific on that. In general, we have some of the structure we have is early-late splits, so it's the thought on that process is basically like to split up the hunting pressure, both from a social aspect and from the, you know, deer herd's perspective on trying to get more people out early in the season when it's hot and dry and potentially less success, and then fewer people in that late season when the deer are more active. That's one aspect. Now, but we do have these late hunts in certain areas, like along the western.
I'm talking about the splits where you
okay.
Have let's just take a look at the first one, 011 early, 011 late.
Sure.
And I noticed on the earlies, it's usually 75% of the tags are
yep.
in that clump.
Yep.
And then 25% are in the late clump.
Yep.
And why the, and I noticed, like, when you look at preference points, it takes about four times as many preference points to get the late hunt than the early hunt. So what is the purpose of the late hunt?
Well, in general, it's more favorable conditions for hunting. It's, you know, in general, they're more successful. You might have a higher chance of harvesting a more mature buck during that season. A lot of it has to do with, you know, the weather, the changing of the weather. It's really not the rut period on these structures like this, but it's more of the pre-rut period when the bucks start moving around. They become a little more accessible for some people. In some cases, you might have early season snows that push them down onto closer to winter range. So that's why we keep the quota lower. I mean, it was basically designed initially, the commission designed these to try to provide a diversity of different type of hunting. So you have the early season structure where you might have more tags, more hunters in the field, but lower, you know, success rate essentially, whereas your late season, shorter, lower quota, you're not going to be running into as many people out there, but you might have a more quality hunting experience, if you will.
And part of our quota system is based upon hunter success, a large portion of it.
Yes.
Right.
So we factor the success rate in, you know,
right.
differently for the early versus the late, basically.
So where I'm going with one of the things I'd like our board to consider and then the commission to consider is two things. On every unit that has an early late, where the early is October 5 through October 20, and then the late date is October 21 through November 5. So just those, and there's about 15 of them in here, or maybe 20, that all of those we consider two things. One is to close, is to have a gap in the season between the early and the late. By that, I would like to consider that the late season, that the early season stays as it is, October 5th through October 20th, and then that the late season gets moved back to October 27th through November 12th. Now, first of all, I know Cody's going in his head, you're going to put that into the rut. And is that right, Cody?
I mean, it would be more towards the, peak of the rut. I wouldn't say fully into the
rut. Right, but it's getting a lot closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two things would happen. First of all, it would make it more of that trophy hunt. Success might go up, which means the number of tags might go down, which would make it so that those of us who want to save up 5 or 7 bonus points could have what would be a less crowded, more opportunity hunt if you wanted to go for that later hunt. And secondly, those mule deer would have a 7-day period where nobody was shooting at them with a rifle. So I've always thought that we should close our hunts too early. Thinking back to my hunting days in the 1980s, 1970s, we didn't close on the 5th of November. It was always either the second week or the third weekend in November. And I think it's, well, if we don't talk about it now, we won't be able to talk about it until 2020.
I gotcha. Cody, I appreciate that. Do you have any comments on that? That you
want to
offer us?
I mean, biologically, there's no reason we couldn't have that. Other states have similar structures like that. You know, Colorado has like a 4-season structure, and those 3rd and 4th seasons, they hunt much later into the...
Between each one.
Yeah, and they have rest periods, so...
You feel like that rest period is essential? I mean, given your...
I mean, the deer herds that we've had so far have been getting along, you know, fairly well with their rest, but...
If we put a 7-day... rest period in there, would that have an effect on hunter pressure, do you think, or?
It would probably have the effect of minimizing the how alert the deer are during that time period, but as you said, when they get closer to the rut, the males become kind of less alert, basically.
Yeah.
Well, that's
more vulnerable.
One of the reasons, Mr. Chairman, why I'm suggesting this is to move it back further toward and getting closer to the rut. And the other one is there's a lot of people who will have a tag in the early, and his buddy has one in the late, and so they just stay there and they're already going over. And this would also give a gap where, well, I'm going to have to go home now.
Yeah. So, gotcha.
Is there any consideration to accessibility the later we get into November?
No, you look at some of these hunts that are December 1st through December 15th, and he's been on top of the dog skins on Christmas.
Just asking.
Well, the two areas that you're referencing are the two biggest areas of mule deer that we have, pretty much, right? Would you agree with that? Pequot and North and then Humboldt and Rubies?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, accessibility is already
difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's you should be taking that into consideration when you plan that anyway, right?
So, if you're going to apply for that late tag, you know.
That's right. That's right. And they do put warnings on those that there's, you know, a lot of public, you know, a lot of private land there, and so. I don't see an issue with that. Did you want to make a motion to present that to the commission?
Yeah, I would love to make a motion on that. And I would like to move that on all the late hunts that are connected to an early hunt, that is October 5th through October 20th, that late hunt gets moved to October 27th through November 12th for the 2-year period. And you can go through there and see them all yourself, what they are.
This is for resident mule deer?
Resident mule deer. And it's resident and non-resident mule deer. Any legal hunt, 1331.
Which one?
1331. Do you want to see this?
And to provide a 7-day, or that if you want.
Well, that provides a 7-day.
Yeah.
Right. You just move all of the late season to the 27th through the 12th.
I made a copy of all this stuff and didn't think it would be necessary at the meeting. So playing at home on my desk.
So let's get a second to that motion and then we'll have discussion.
Second.
So we have a first and a second. Second by Mr. Yannick. Any public comment?
So the only thing I would say to that is, from the deer's standpoint, there's probably no issues there. However, some of those we'll probably end up in having overlapping hunts with some of the elk seasons. So, you know, the commission might have to grapple with that because they've always sort of placed priority on trying to avoid overlapping deer and elk hunts. But from a biological and deer herd perspective, no issues.
No, and let me ask you, Cody, if we got more successful because we moved it back the following year, wouldn't you just reduce the number of calves?
On elk?
No, on deer.
On deer?
More successful, you would
reduce. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on how the deer herd was doing, you know, recruitment and all that thing considered, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, any further discussion?
Any other public
comment? So, any public comment on this issue? Seeing none, take a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, any other further discussion on mule deer, resident mule deer, or mule deer in particular? Anything? Seeing none.
See how quickly this goes that way?
I like it. But that's it. So that's everything on agenda item number nine. Carrying on to agenda item number 10. This is a possible action item where a discussion of regarding non-regulatory agenda items is part of the February 10th and 11th, 2017 Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners meeting. So this is basically
any non-regulatory item that we just saw. And so there you go.
Okay, so that does include the item, which would be item 9, right, on the agenda?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you know, I would like to discuss the non-regulation item on the commission agenda. And that would be item number 9 on their agenda.
Right.
Item number 9 on their agenda is the department's discussion on hunting near dwellings and residential areas.
Okay.
I'd like to discuss that. How about you?
I would like to discuss that as well. And so, so. And I have also, no, it's just those ones, just that one. So item number 9 on the commission's agenda is Doug, you're pretty familiar with this, right? When they have the regulation meeting.
Well, you know. Mr. Chairman, yeah. Just Just a little background on this. I had a discussion with Sean Shea today on this particular item, and Sean Shea is the chairman of the Washoe County Wildlife Advisors Board. And this particular item, I asked him, why is this on the agenda? And he said it was requested to be on the agenda, or to be written up to be put on the agenda, basically from the Douglas County Sheriff's Department, who wants to discuss hunting deer residences. In particular, I think it stemmed from an archery hunt near Genoa. So while they were researching this, they were looking at what urban restrictions exist currently that aren't proposed. And so interestingly, they went out and they looked at shooting restrictions in urban areas, and they found that three counties have urban shooting restrictions: Washoe County, Carson City, and Douglas County. And all three of them are similar but different. And if you had read that particular background information, they would show you that currently Carson City has an ordinance that, correct, they have an ordinance that prohibits discharge of firearms, and the city's ordinance lumps into firearms air rifles and air BB guns, air rifles and pistols, air rifles and air pistols. And that, and so while that's not the topic that's being discussed at the commission, it certainly made me look at the city's ordinance and go, wait a minute. And I would ask our Deputy Dan, sorry.
It's like a character from Toy Story.
Yes. to help me out here, but you know, an air rifle is not a firearm, and I know
thank you all.
Definition.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
But by definition,
it's not. It's not by definition. So I mean, really, this is not part of what the commission's considering, but it made me look at our own ordinances in our own city that lumps air guns with firearms. And you and I both having a background in this, we both know that that's not true. So, I mean, where can we go with this tonight? Because the agenda item is really to only discuss it in the context of what the commission is doing. Correct?
That's correct.
Right. And they're just going to have a discussion about it. But when I read what the commission's looking at and what the background was, it showed me that the Carson City had already done this and lumped it in. And it's not just a proposal. What I think you're thinking about is what the Open Space Committee is proposing with a map and an overlay. But that's just to take what we currently have. So I don't think we can really discuss this much more than just have a discussion. We can't have a motion. We can't have public comment. I don't think.
What is the, in your opinion, what is the commission looking to, what are they looking to do here? I don't understand.
Well, the commission,
I guess that's where my confusion
is. Well, okay. And this was explained by the representatives at the Washoe County meeting to Sean, and now it's being filtered through me, so you know, play telephone.
Okay.
But Sean explained that the sheriff was concerned about sheriff from Douglas County being concerned about a deer being killed near or in Genoa with a bow during the any legal hunt season. And so he just wanted to have an opportunity to know what are the restrictions on hunting in urban areas, so that he can have his 5 minutes of discussion at the commission meeting, and to bring up this issue that, well, you limit rifles, but totally. You're not limiting bows.
Right.
And so that's what I'm hearing, is why this is on the commission's agenda.
Okay. Yeah. I don't see any issue. Does anybody want to take any action on that particular item?
I don't.
No, but because I think it's already codified in Carson City County. I mean, when you look at the definitions...
Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but what's on the commission is not talking about what's codified in Carson City.
Right.
It's just the Douglas County Sheriff wants to have a discussion about archery hunting in urban areas. That's what he wants to do, I hear.
Okay.
But can you...
But wouldn't that be a county issue? I mean, amongst...
Well, it is.
...constituents as opposed to...
Inbound
regulates hunting and method of take.
Well, and that was basically Sean's message to me was, you know, the people there were going, I don't know why this is here. Sean's going, I don't know why this is here. And so Friday, one of us will find out what the Douglas County Sheriff wants to talk about.
I can reach out to Ron and ask him what his intent there is too.
But you know, I would like to just say that sometime, I would love to talk to the city about their existing ordinance.
Yeah, this brings up something. When I saw this, the thing that brought my attention was not the archery issue at all.
Right.
The thing that brought my attention was the fact that they're lumping BB guns and air rifles into firearms. And I immediately thought, oh my goodness, all the Boy Scout events and Cub Scout events that we have, where we set up these beautiful inflatable ranges for BB gun shooting and in trailers and that sort of thing. According to this, and I'm not a legal professional, but big concern there that we may be in violation of the law, the current law or court ordinance here.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I know it's not on the agenda, so we certainly can discuss further action. That might be something that
maybe two private citizens should go talk to the district attorney in Carson City.
I just think that's limiting some of the one activity that these young boys want to do the most, right? When they go to Cub Scout day camp, that is the one, you pull them, and their parents too. That's the one thing. That and archery are the two things that these boys want to do. Girl Scouts, same thing.
And you know, a Red Ryder BB gun does not go 5,000 feet.
No.
No, I'm just saying.
Nor does it go.
How long has it been?
Less than 200 foot per second.
For a long time. Okay.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think we need to, I think you're right. I think that maybe going forward in the future, if I'm going to bring this up to a lot of our sportsmen's groups that sponsor that. Wild Sheep Show, Boy Scouts of America, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has a BB gun range. All of the USA Archery folks; those are all things that this prohibits. So I'm going to bring that up to them, and that might be a way for us to petition
Shields Indoor Range.
Yeah, to the city on this, the Board of Supervisors. Anyway, all right. So hearing no recommendations on this, let's carry on. Is there any other non-regulatory agenda items that anybody would like to discuss? Okay, hearing none. Can I call for a motion to accept the non-regulatory agenda items?
That's not necessary.
Perfect. So I rescind that. Item number 11 is a discussion of possible action regarding advisory board commitments to the February 10th and 11th 2017 Wildlife Commission meeting here in Carson City. I will just say that since it's at my office, I will be there on Friday for sure. Saturday, I will not be able to be there. So if somebody can be there for Saturday, that would be great.
Well, you know, it's not at your office building. It's next door.
Okay, it's in the capital annex. All right. Call me a liar for 100 feet.
No, so Mr. Chairman, you're planning on attending.
I will be there on Friday for sure.
So I can attend on Saturday if you'd like.
Okay.
This is for the February meeting?
I'm sorry?
Information meeting this Friday.
The February.
It's in the annex, not the assembly chamber?
It's up in the...
I highly recommend you come.
I plan on it, but I was confused when you said annex. I spent I had an office there for 13 years in the annex part, the round building.
Really nice room.
So, yeah, that's why I was confused. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's where we hold BOE, oh, yeah. IC sometimes.
So, Mr. Chair, you'll be attending Friday, but who's attending Saturday?
Doug. Okay, so that's good there. Item number 12, the next Carson City Advisory Board to Manage Wildlife meeting will be, actually the next commissioners meeting is March 24th and 25th. It'll be in Southern Nevada. And so we're proposing having our meeting on Monday the 20th. Are there any conflicts or anything like that? One thing I would ask is it possible that we start at 4 o'clock? Is that a hindrance to anybody? Gil?
Can I get back? You don't have the schedule with me.
All right, so can we tentatively make it 4 unless you get back to us and there's a conflict that you can't overcome?
I'm good with 4.
Yeah. Okay. So,
Mr. Chairman, you might want to ask if because of the meeting is in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
If anybody is interested in going to that,
yeah,
I know I can.
I was going to get there, but tomorrow, can we try and are you going to look? Do you just automatically look over at the community center for us? Okay, perfect. And then
we do, and if you start at 4, we might be able to get you in if you're done by whatever time the next meeting is. The only reason we can't do it is because today redevelopment was meeting. At 5:30.
Do they like trump us, or is it first come, first serve type thing?
They book it a year ahead.
I gotcha.
We don't know what your schedule is.
I gotcha. All right, so in regards to the meeting down in Southern Nevada, is there anybody that can attend that? Gil?
Yeah, because I want to use up the tickets going to expire that I couldn't make.
Okay. So we'll have Gil Yannick attend on behalf of the Carson City CAB. All right. Item number 13, any future agenda items that anybody would like to bring up for our future agenda? This is kind of a time where if you want something on a future agenda item for us to consider, we certainly can do that this time. I've seen none. Doug, any? You good? Okay. And then item number 14 is public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment and discuss any matter that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson Advisory Board to manage wildlife, including any matter that is not specifically included on this agenda as an action item. No action may be taken on this matter raised under this item of the agenda. Any public comment? Yes, ma'am.
I have a public comment, actually, and I don't want to hear myself. I just wanted to remind you that you can track up to 10 bills with the legislature for free. I don't know if y'all knew this. And the way to do it is you do www.leg.state.nv.us. And then there's a right-hand bar that says personalized legislative tracking.
Yep.
So if you're interested, go for it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, works pretty well.
Any other public comment? The only thing I will ask is, are there any wildlife bills so far that anybody has seen? I've been tracking all my own in my own agency, so I haven't had a chance to look. But
I'll get a list. You'll get a list on Friday, okay. Because the legislative committee will be giving a report.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Do we need a call for an action? Do we need to take action to adjourn?
Yes. Hello. Yeah. Historically, I think that's been the practice, but you could adjourn as the chair.
Okay.
Whatever you fancy.
Yeah. I normally don't have an RV. Okay. So, motion to adjourn?
Second.
Okay, perfect. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. Thank you very much for being here.
All those opposed, please stay in your seat.
Thank you.